Coming up, I have football and I have teen culture for you. Two of your favorite things. Well, maybe one of your favorite things, but which one will it be? You'll find out next. It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Monopoly Go. It's halftime and the scoreboard's not looking good. You're not sure you can pull out a win? That's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. I might do this with my high school friends. We used to play Monopoly all the time. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone anytime with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress. There's so much to do. Play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. Make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. Charge other players rent for your iconic properties. Maybe you'll even play against me. I'm great at Monopoly. You could even work with your friends to crack open community chests and in tournaments to get extra rewards. Get back out there. Put on your game face. Download Monopoly Go. Now free on the App Store or Google Play. We're also brought to you by TheRinger.com and the Ringer Podcast Network. Our Ringer Fantasy Football Show, they did a year-end kind of award show, but they did it in the style of the Rewatchables, which it was fair game for them to do because Craig Horlbeck, who is one of the hosts on that show, is also the producer of the Rewatchables. So they did all the Rewatchables categories and tried to figure out how to apply it to the fantasy season. So I thought that was pretty fun. Check that out. Check out the end of The Wire, Way Down in the Hole with Van Lathan and Jemele Hill as well, which wrapped up season 5 and now is done. I have new Rewatchables coming for you on Monday. A very famous movie. Stay tuned for that. You can listen to Mr. Holland's Opus, which went up Monday as well. Coming up, going to break down week 17 and all the playoff ramifications. And more importantly, all the gambling implications with Peter Schrager. And then my daughter, Zoe Simmons, came on to talk about the year in teen culture. The best and the worst. There's a lot of worst, not a lot of best. But she is just in this this whole universe that I kind of pass through every once in a while when I walk into a room and like, what are you watching? What is that? She's going to explain all of it. And that is all next. First, for the last time in 2020, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, Peter Schrager is here from Good Morning Football. We're taping this on a Wednesday afternoon, and I've been getting killed in million-dollar picks trying to do these picks midweek, but we're going to do some big-picture stuff first, talk about some coaches. The first thing I wanted to talk about, though, is I was looking at the NFC Championship odds, and this is one of those rare seasons where I'm not sure I like any NFC title team. I was kind of waiting for the Rams to come through, and now it looks like that's falling apart. They might not even make the playoffs. Goff has a broken thumb. Who do you, if you had to bet, I'm going to give you all these odds. Green Bay right now to win the NFC title is plus 155, and they're probably going to have the bye week unless something disastrous happens against the Bears. The Saints are plus 255. Seahawks are plus 425. Tampa's plus 450. And then it jumps. It goes to the Rams at 15-1. The Bears at 30-1. I said them plus 450. The Washington's plus 36-1, basically. Arizona's 44-1. Is there anyone that do you feel like there's even close to a sure thing? Or do you feel like there's a tasty sleeper?
Yeah, the value there to me. And I was texting you during the game and you mentioned it on your podcast with Cousins. I think Tampa Bay is like suddenly good. Suddenly angry, suddenly listen to all the critics and like, it's kind of clicking. They won 47-7 on Saturday against the Lions. that could have been the most lopsided football game we've ever seen. It could have been 80-0. It felt like the varsity versus Pop Warner. And like, I know those guys in that organization, from the coaching staff to the front office, like, they wanted to make a statement that game. I think they're going to make a statement this week, even if it is Gabbert, whoever plays. I feel like they're on a tear, and they were pissed off at everyone critiquing them. So value play, I think the Bucks, but Packers, if that wasn't a statement Sunday night in the snow, I'm not sure what wasn't.
So Bucks plus 450. If you put them in a Super Bowl matchup, you could put them with Bucks Chiefs is 7-1. The one that I thought was tasty. Bucks Bills 27-1. I mean, just from an odd standpoint, that seems like the best value, because I like the Bills the most out of any AFC team right now. I it's funny, I was thinking the same way with you with Tampa. I'm not sure they're any worse than any of my other options. So if I'm getting plus 450 to win the NFC title, you know, in round one they're going to be playing whatever the NFC East team is left, so it's like a borderline bye, and then who knows.
And then who knows? And Brady will be going into where? Let's say Brady, as the 5 seed, beats Washington or the Giants or the Cowboys. And then they've got to go play the 2 seed. All right. So are we going to roll our dice and say, all right, Brady can go into Seattle? Yeah, I think Brady and the Bucs can go into Seattle. Or can Brady go into New Orleans? Well, it's not the craziest thing. And they've beaten them twice. And it's one of those deals where it's like, it's really hard to beat a team 3 times. And then it's Brady in the snow up in Green Bay versus Rodgers. I mean, sign me up. I love that matchup. So I like Brady as a value pick. And then in the AFC, Bills are playing better football than the Chiefs right now.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. I don't know if they beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead in an AFC championship game, but gosh, if it goes from 7-1 to 27-1, yeah, absolutely. That's a fun Super Bowl. If you got the Buccaneers-Bills, no one had that before the season started.
The Bills did what I wanted them to do in that Patriots game. Not as a Patriots fan, but just as somebody who was a kind of a Bills believer, as a real sleeper. Like, they end of the season, December, just take care of business. Beat the crap out of every team you play. And that's what they're doing. They have a real swagger to them, too, that I think is going to be important, because you're going to need a swagger to go in Arrowhead and beat Mahomes.
You have to. And they lost to them at home in October. But remember, it was one of those weird games where it was rescheduled. They played them. They didn't have Matt Milano, who's one of their star linebackers. He wasn't there.
Was that bad weather, too? That was a weird weather game. Yeah.
It was in crazy rain. And oddly enough, Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran for 161 yards, and the Chiefs just ran all over him. And like, I don't think that game, I think that game is an outlier. I really do. I think that the Bills are a different team, and I don't think that defense is one that gives up 161 yards to anybody if they ever play him again.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire, what's his deal heading into the playoffs? Yeah.
It's a big deal. It's a huge X factor. Their offense was not the same without him. So when he went down at the end of that Saints game, I was texting guys with the Chiefs, and they're like, the hope is 3 to 4 weeks, but we got to take care of business next week, obviously. So now they have the week off this week. Technically, they're going to rest everybody. So he's now got 1 week, 2 weeks. They'll have the bye week. That's a third week. And they're hoping he's back for the divisional round. But I go on a morning show and we do it every day and we do flips for 3 hours. But every team, like, that might be the most underappreciated or under talked about storyline, like how good he is. Even though he didn't put up crazy numbers for fantasy, he had 1,100 yards from scrimmage, and he is a nightmare to game plan against. I think if he's back, they're fully loaded. If he's not, you might see what you saw against the Falcons.
So let's try to talk out how the Chiefs could lose in round two or round three. You figure if everything holds, you figure Tennessee and Miami is the 4-5.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs would play the winner of that, unless there's a 6-3 upset or a 2-7 upset. Now, Pittsburgh, I would say, is a very vulnerable 3-6. And that could end up being Pittsburgh-Baltimore.
Yeah.
In round one, Baltimore could absolutely be Pittsburgh. And then all of a sudden, Baltimore's going to Arrowhead. We've seen that game before.
We've seen that game 3 times, Lamar versus Mahomes, and Mahomes has beaten him every time. I do feel like Baltimore's coming in with a different head of steam, though, this time, right?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that, though, because we haven't. They're doing what they've done for 2 years, is they beat bad teams, and Lamar looks great. And even last week, they had a blowout. Everyone's like, oh, Lamar. It's like, really? You
know, it's a crazy stat we had, that they have the largest point differential of any team in the league this year. Like, more than the Chiefs, more than the Saints, more than the Bucks, more than the Packers. Like, when they beat teams, the Jaguars, the Giants, they blow them out. But then when the good teams play them, they don't win.
So you think, let's just say Baltimore goes there in round one.
Yeah.
It's at least going to be a physical game.
Yes.
Something weird could happen. I think the Chiefs would win it, but then they would go right to Buffalo the week after, which, you know, Buffalo's got a lot of weapons. And if the Chiefs can't run the ball the way that they did last year, I think they're vulnerable. I think it becomes harder for them to protect leads. And I do think, I believe in this blueprint that teams are doing against them where they're just like, oh, run for 5 yards. We're going to take out Kelce. We're taking out Tyreek. We're not letting those guys beat us. That's what Belichick would do.
You know, I watched the entire Falcons-Chiefs game, and it was frustrating if you're a Chiefs fan because they had to have that win. They had to clinch the one seed. And it did seem like they were just kind of, you know, dicking around the first three quarters. But then, like, this is the same case against the Chargers. It was the same case against the Ravens. It was the same case against some of these games recently. Like, when they need to, Chiefs find a way to get that third and five. Mahomes runs for 6 yards, or he'll find Kelce on third and 10. And then they seem to have this weird luck that goes their way. AJ Terrell drops that interception, which was a sure thing. And then Younghoe Koo, who hasn't missed a field goal all year, just you know, gets blocked or whatever it was. He misses it. So on paper, it seems like, yeah, look, they're not beating teams by enough and they don't look like they're that interested. And then they're 14-1, you know? And like, are we going to wake up the morning after the Super Bowl and be like, oh shit, they just went 18-1 and ran through the entire league and we didn't appreciate them for the first 3 months of the season because they weren't beating teams by enough? Buffalo's a weird one because last year Josh Allen had that like short circuit against the Texans where he was lateraling the ball. He was playing crazy. They were up 16 points. They lost. I think they match up really well with the Chiefs. I really do. And I think Allen has already gotten over that hump of like, ooh, bright lights. Like, they win on primetime every week.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like last year that might have been a storyline. This year, he does have swagger, and I talked to those guys up there. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. He ain't scared of the Chiefs, and I feel like that's the kind of team that can knock the Chiefs out. I don't know about the Ravens this year.
The thing I like about them the most out of all the AFC teams is they can play from behind and they can play when they're ahead. I like that they can run the ball. I like that they can protect leads, and I like that they can do different wrinkles depending on who they're playing, right? They can do the thing they did against the Niners where they spread everyone out, basically make Allen the running back, and they're just like, all right, try to stop this. They can go conventional and just run the ball down your throat and bring in more tight ends, all that stuff. They always have Diggs who can make a play. This week, they're a little banged up with some of the COVID stuff, which we'll get into when we do million-dollar picks. But the concern I have for the Chiefs is the same I have for the Steelers, which manifests itself the last few weeks. They can't run the ball at a high level. And if you're up three, you're up seven in the fourth quarter, you know, and the way you're going to be able to move the ball to protect the lead is you're going to have to throw it. That's when weird shit happens. And you pointed out the Terrell drop last week. That was a huge play and he should have caught
it. Huge play. It totally changes the playoff landscape. You know, if he does catch that, then suddenly the Bills have a chance and then the Steelers have a chance. And then the Chiefs have to play this week. The other thing with Kansas City is, you know, their defense does give up a lot of points, but they seem to make clutch plays when it matters.
Yep.
And it's like one of those deals where they've got this guy, L'Jarius Sneed, a fourth round pick that no one talked about, who is their best cornerback. He plays nickel, but he comes up with a pick. And then Chris Jones and Frank Clark could be quiet all game long, but they'll get the sack when it matters. So it's so hard to say, yeah, but with the Chiefs, because they do always, always find a way to win these games.
Yeah.
The Bills do that with the five wide and the whole thing. And I remember they played Seattle. Everyone was talking about like Metcalf and Lockett and Moore, and Russell Wilson was undefeated at the time. And look what they can do. And then the Bills came out and were like, here's our five wide. We've got all these wide receivers and we're going to crush you. You know, the Diggs thing, I think it happened the same exact day as DeAndre Hopkins was traded. And everyone did flips about DeAndre Hopkins trade. And that trade has worked out really well for Arizona. And DeAndre has been great for them. Stephon Diggs leads the league in receptions and receiving yards. And I speak to those guys, the coaches on the Bills. They're like, you don't really know this, but like, you don't see it, but he's also the leader in the locker room.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing that they brought in. So with Diggs, who has been to the NFC Championship game with the Vikings, who has been through a crazy playoff win at the Superdome last year over the Saints with Kirk Cousins, like, he has that for them in the playoffs too, which I think goes a long way. The Bills, I'm really high on the Bills right now.
Me too. The Diggs thing's funny because he was kind of a dick last year in Minnesota, right? And if you're watching from afar, you're thinking, all right, I see his point with Cousins, but at the same time, this seems to me like a diva receiver whose stats aren't what he thought they were going to be, and he's, you know, just being a dick. And then you see him on Buffalo, and then you watch Cousins for another year, and you go, oh, man, no wonder. No wonder he was acted this way. Must have driven him crazy. Like, why weren't they feeding him more? I got to be honest. I didn't realize he was as good as he was until the trade happened, when some of the smart people who were crunching the stats and being like, he does this, this happened, he's actually this. And I was like, week to week, I didn't feel that way watching it as much. But man, the stats don't lie.
No, and I didn't either, to be honest. And we've had him on Good Morning Football probably 3 or 4 times. Great personality, great kid. But I'm like, he's not built like Calvin Johnson. I don't know if he's got the hands of, you know, an Edelman. Like, I don't know what he brings that is such that next level. And in the NFL, draft capital is everything. And you give up a first round pick, he better be a home run. And, you know, I know the Vikings are happy with Justin Jefferson and they're paying him 1/10 of the amount of money that Stephon Diggs is being paid. But gosh, that addition that he brings, and you're right, it's like, there was a play on the Monday night game where they played against the 49ers where it was a pass to Dawson Knox who goes in for a touchdown. But if you watch the play, Stephon Diggs takes out 3 players with a block and right. He, like, gives up his body. And he's like one of the best blocking receivers also. I don't even know if I would have put him in my top 20 wide receivers before the season. I think he might be number 1 or 2 with Devontae Adams.
There's a really fun scenario in round 3 where we could have Buffalo at Kansas City. And we need a little help. We need a 6 or a 7 seed to win in round 1. But we could also have Tampa at Green Bay. Mm. And Rodgers, Brady in the NFC title game, which would just be out of control. And the Brady-Belichick rivalry, Brady's now comfortably ahead. But, you know, felt this way for the last couple of years. If it's a shitty defense, he's going to do really well. And the better the defense is, especially the front, the front 7, if they can pressure him, all that stuff, he's a different guy. And I don't really know who has that defense to bother him in the NFC other than the Saints, which we already saw. I think the Saints could be the one team that could really come at him. Do you see, unless the Rams got in there, but the Rams, it's true. Like they feel like a cross off at this point.
Yeah, Tampa also beat the Rams. I mean, the Rams also beat Tampa.
Yeah.
That was in Tampa, but like the Rams don't look the same. The big wild card or the X factor in all of this is that the Bucs beat the shit out of the Packers this year.
Mm.
Like earlier this season, like they beat. So suddenly it's like, oh, the mighty Packers. Well, the Bucs come in and they're like, Rodgers, you know, I think Brady threw 5 touchdowns against them. I think Rodgers threw a bunch of picks. It was one of those games where like Aikman and Buck were on it and everyone was excited for this big clash and the Buccaneers wiped the floor with them. So that was a while ago, but that one kind of lingers. Defensively, the teams that give Brady trouble are right on. You know, the Giants historically, they did it. And then the last couple games, it's been the Bears. Khalil Mack was breathing down his neck on that Thursday night game. The Rams, they were really good against him. And I guess the Saints, but you know, you're right. You put that offensive line out there and you just give him a little bit more time. Brady has been dialed in. I never root for teams. I'm not like a guy like, I just, that's a cool matchup. Brady in Lambeau, if there's snow, like it's hard for me to say I'd rather see the Rams or the Cardinals go up to Lambeau instead.
Well, you know how this works. We won't get the 2 best matchups. It'll be somebody will crash the party. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to tell us about some coach stuff and then we'll do $1 million picks. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. Closing the deal can be a real challenge sometimes. Like, remember when the Celtics, once upon a time, could have traded Kevin McHale for Sam Perkins and Detlef Schrempf to Dallas? It became a big what if because it would have made the Celtics younger, it would have made them better, but they also would have broken up the big 3. They would have broken up Bird and Parrish and McHale. So would we have won the title if we did that trade? Probably not. I'm kind of glad they kept Kevin McHale, but you know, we lost out on a chance to really get younger. You know, another place where it could be a struggle to get a win? Not just with trades, B2B selling. But luckily, you can use LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's a sales intelligence platform that helps you target the right customers to drive revenue and grow your business so you can start selling like a superstar. Maybe Detlef Schrempf would have become a superstar in the Celtics. We'll never know. Try LinkedIn Sales Navigator now with a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. All right. How many coaches are getting the axe? If you had to guess, over under 4.5?
All right, we got 3 already who are vacant. I could think of 2 more that I know. So yeah, I think there's going to be about 6 or 7 openings.
6 or 7 openings, yeah. Not counting the interim. Is that does count the interim
coaching?
Counting
the interim.
Okay.
So you got Detroit, Atlanta, Houston.
Yep.
And like, they're very touchy with this at the NFL Network. And also, I don't love it because it means that I'm firing someone. But like, let's just assume Jacksonville and the Jets.
Yep.
All right. And then there's a couple wild cards. One of them being, I'm not sure what they're doing with Los Angeles with the Chargers just yet. I think
it seems like there's some Anthony Lynn momentum.
I feel like there is.
People love that guy. Can't they just hire him, somebody to stand next to him, that like the 12-year-old Madden player, and just try that for a year?
It's so funny you say that, because the thing is with him, like, the players love him.
Yeah.
The owners love him. And like, around the league, a lot of people are like, Anthony's the man. But like, I don't know if he's going to be the head coach next year. That's the only, like, I don't know if you can keep him as coach after the way things went off the rails. So that's one I'm keeping my eye on. And I was a little bit surprised, but I think it's been, they're saying Vic Fangio in Denver is safe right now. So that one was a wild card also. But Matt Nagy, I don't think, is going anywhere after the last couple wins. And there's usually, I would only say there's usually one wild card that we're not expecting that happens. And you're like, whoa, okay, that happened. So as of right now, those are the ones I see.
Peterson?
I think Doug hangs on. I do. I think they look at this as a one-year deal and they say, all right, COVID was weird. We don't know. You still got the skins on the wall and you still got the locker room. I don't think Doug's losing his job.
How about the only other wild card I was thinking was Cincinnati?
I think he's good.
Okay.
I think he's good. They've won a couple games in a row, and like, he's not a big personality, Zach Taylor, but the young players seem to like him. And Burrow, who very easily could have come out of this thing and rolled his eyes, seems to be his biggest champion. So I think that helps a lot.
I mailed you on FanDuel. They have odds for the Detroit Lions next head coach.
Let's break it down.
Robert Saleh was plus 200. There's a bunch of other, I mean, there's a million names, but yeah. Jim Harbaugh was plus 450. Bieniemy was plus 700. Arthur Smith was 11-1. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed seeing Marvin Lewis at 16-1. Todd Bowles at 16-1. Dabo Sweeney was 26-1. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, that one's really interesting, actually. So let's first go through who's doing it. So they have the heir to the Ford, family. She's going to be running the search with Chris Spielman, who I worked as a sideline reporter for on Fox. He was hired now full time as a Lions. He left the booth to be the special counsel for this. Now, Spielman, I've known him forever, is hard-nosed football culture guy. Like, he is your football guy, and he's in the gym at 5 a.m. at the age of 55, and he's working out, and he's getting his squats in, and he's football culture. And then they've got some front office guys, and their president, Rod Wood, is going to be kind of running point. I know already they've done a bunch of Zoom sessions for prospective GMs. Like, they've already interviewed like six different GMs over Zoom. Coaching wise, they want culture, and they want the right guy to build. They're not worried about X's and O's.
You mean basically what they thought they were getting with Matt Patricia and whiffed on?
Yeah. I would say this: Harbaugh, no shot in the state of Michigan after the things have gone at University of Michigan. So cross him off. I would say anyone with Patriots ties, cross him off, because they just got done with Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia and it just didn't work. Saleh, really quick, the dossier on Saleh to the Lions. Born in Dearborn, Michigan, 2 miles from the facility.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Both his mom and dad still live 2 miles from the Lions facility. He's Lebanese. They have the largest Middle Eastern population outside of the Middle East, lives in that Detroit suburban area.
Wow.
Okay. And then he can also bring any of those 49ers assistants, which are all hot prospects, and he can have one of them as like his offensive guy. So he's for sure the front runner. And he had a graduate degree from Michigan State. He's got all that. Only other option I think that I would circle is the guy you mentioned, Arthur Smith from Tennessee. I think he's a thinking man. I think he's cerebral. And I think there's an offensive side of that I think might excite them a little bit.
Robert Saleh, 2-1.
I go with it, dude.
That's pretty good.
The only reason he'd have to either not interview well and not get offered, or if there's another job available, Atlanta, Jacksonville, that wants him, or the Jets, and he just doesn't choose Detroit. But I would be very surprised if he went a different direction.
Do you think Gase might have saved his job last couple weeks or no?
I don't. I love the way that team is playing. I love the way they're fighting. Like, I think Adam is most likely going to be a coach somewhere else next year. Not a head coach, but I'd be surprised. Look, I've seen crazy things. I've seen Pagano keep his job after everyone had fired him for months, a couple years ago. Jim Irsay that night after they won like a meaningless week 17 game was like, let's bring it back for one more time. Like, I've seen that stuff happen, but I would think the Jets are hiring a new coach.
Any wild card college dudes that you think are going to come in?
Yeah, a couple names. This guy, PJ Fleck.
Yeah.
who's the coach in Minnesota. I think he's 40 years old. There's been a little buzz about him the last few days. I've gotten a couple texts asking me what I know about him, which is nothing. I don't really know him at all, but he played in the NFL, apparently played in college, has experience, and teams kind of are interested in at least listening to that thinking. I think Urban Meyer is an interesting one. I think Urban Meyer is fascinating. Urban has been great on the Fox pregame show. And like, I work for Fox, so all disclaimers out there, they view their show, and I think a lot of viewers do, like right up there with the ESPN one, if you gave it a shot. Like, they like what they have, and Urban is one of the main reasons
why. I think
why.
Rob Stone's a real weak link, though. I don't know about that guy.
You know, hey, not every team is a perfect Fab Five. I just think sometimes
it's if they could only overcome Rob Stone, I think it would be a good show.
But it is good. It's like Stoner and like, and they love Urban there. And when Rob Stone's not doing soccer, he's fantastic on the college football show. But the thing with Urban is like, if one of these teams was to hand him the keys, I'd be really interested to see how it goes. And when I say hand the keys, I mean, you could be the coach, you could be the personnel guy, you could hire your own staff, and we're giving you a blank check. And like, think about connections with Urban. A lot of people originally thought Chargers just because LA and there's Flash and there's like, and then there's that Jacksonville where he was the coach of the University of Florida and Shad Khan has unlimited money. And that franchise right now seems pretty rudderless. So I don't know if Urban would leave Fox. I'm not sure his contract situation with them, but his name keeps on coming up and it does every year. But this year it feels like it's coming up more often.
If you're Shad Khan, why wouldn't you godfather offer Dabo?
Not a bad idea, right? Like, say you got Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, you know how good Trevor Lawrence is. Just attach your kite to his leg and let's go.
And it's weird because like David Tepper, the Carolina owner, did that with Matt Rhule last year and basically was like, here's a deal. You can't leave your living room. I'm giving you this deal. And then as part of it, Tepper was like to Rhule, like, you can bring your defensive coordinator, Phil Snow, who no one knows. You can bring him. I don't care. I'll take whoever. Like, I want you. So it's not the craziest thing. Shad, you know, his son Tony is a really interesting guy. Might be Fulham. He owns one of the soccer teams out there in London, like Premier League.
Well, he also owns AEW, which has been a legitimate WWF competitor.
Right? And it came out of nowhere, I think. And it really does have a big fan base. And Tony and Shad are both kind of involved. And at some point, there will be a passing of the torch. But, you know, if you're Urban Meyer, if you're going to get back in bed in the NFL, you're going to have a lot of things. And I think that's a good – those two would have to be really, really open to letting Urban kind of – do his thing if it was Jacksonville.
Are we sure Belichick is the Patriots coach next year?
Ooh, I think so, right? I think so. Everything I hear is he will be. And like the one name that hasn't been mentioned much this year is Josh McDaniels, who over the last couple of years was the hottest name. But, you know, it's like almost, you know, the blackjack player hitting on 15, hitting on 6. Like, I'm going to wait another year. Like, I don't know if there's an opportunity for Josh this time. And yet, around the league is still one of the most respected offensive coaches. I just don't know if it fires up a fan base after this past season.
Well, and also when he pulled out of the Indianapolis thing at the 11th hour, that's not great. That would make me nervous to hire him if I was in a hiring position.
I mean, Cleveland still interviewed him last year. I don't think it's like it's hurt him too badly. It's one of those.
They didn't hire him though.
They didn't hire him. You're right.
I think you can miss your window as a GM or a coach. And I know this happens in the NBA. You see guys become the hot GM prospect. If they don't grab it for about 2 years, it kind of fades away and they move to the next crop of hot GM prospects, you know? And same thing for NFL coaches. I'm sure that's the case. We always have the hot assistants. I think it's really hard. I was talking about this with somebody this week. I think it's really hard to tell. Like, if you're hiring from a really successful head coach and you're like, well, that's his offensive coordinator, his defensive coordinator, so this guy must be good too. Like, how do you know? Ultimately, it's like
Bieniemy. Bieniemy is in a tough spot here because I think Eric will get a head coaching job and he deserves it. He really does. He's fantastic. But it's almost unfair because Eric Bieniemy can do all these trick plays and the players can rave about him and he can interview well. There's still going to be people who say, yeah, but Andy Reid's the guy.
And you have, and he has Pat Mahomes.
And you've got Pat Mahomes.
So how do you evaluate that other than the interview and talking to people, the fact that Mahomes vouches for him is great. I think he should get a job this year. But if I'm trying to hire a head coach and I'm looking at him, I'm like, all right, he's got Andy Reid, one of the best like 8 coaches of all time. And he's got Pat Mahomes, who might be the best quarterback of all time. How do I know what this guy would be like if I'm giving him Matthew Stafford? And no Andy
precisely.
Reid. I don't know.
Precisely. And then, you know, it's interesting. It's like funny how these things work. So Bieniemy is still a hot name. And again, I think he will get a job and he will get interviews for sure. Their quarterbacks coach, Mike Kafka, who used to play for the Eagles, and went to Northwestern and is like 30, maybe 29. I had people texting me this week being like, don't sleep on Kafka as a possibility. I'm like, wait. Bieniemy, you're not going to give, but then Kafka,
that's
who's
crazy.
29 or 30, but he's the quarterback's coach. Like, well, he's the one who works with Mahomes directly. I'm like, stop. Like, let's think this through. There's a couple of them.
Well, that's like a Joe Judge thing, right? Where it's just like out of nowhere. Whoa, wait, what?
Yep.
Joe Brady's another one. Everybody likes Joe Brady.
Everyone loves Joe Brady. He's 30, and it's not like the Panthers lit up the league this year. And then the other one, you know, McVay was this hot shot guy, and it actually worked out. But his defensive coordinator is a guy, Brandon Staley, who's 38, and last year was the outside linebackers coach for the Denver Broncos. And now they're saying might get head coaching interviews because of how good their defense is. But again, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, Michael Brocker is like, it's a pretty good core to work with.
I hope Jim Caldwell, somebody I made a lot of jokes about over the years, just because every time they showed him, it looked like stock footage. But his team's won everywhere he went.
Right.
You know, and I think when he got fired, he was 10-6 or 9-7, something like that.
I think he was 9-7. Yeah. I think the Lions went like 10-6, 9-7, 9-7, and then fired Caldwell and hired Patricia, who didn't get better than like 7-9. Like,
Caldwell and Lewis over rolling the dice and keeping your fingers crossed because somebody was a coordinator for a good coach. I don't know. If I guess it depends what your motivation is, right? Do you want to just have a competent franchise, or you're trying to win the Super Bowl?
Well, that's exactly right. So after this COVID year of everything being so topsy-turvy, I think there is something to be having an adult in the room. And
yeah.
Like, hey, Marvin Lewis, like, I know the players respect you and you're going to get it done, but is your fan base doing flips? Are we sure, Marvin? The revisionist history on Lewis is that it's a miracle that team went to the playoffs 5 years in a row with the lack of they don't have the most money as an organization. The facilities were a dump for a while. They don't have all the scouts other teams do. His staff was limited, and yet they were always in the playoffs. They didn't win the playoffs, but there's that. One more name is a guy named Wink Martindale, who's the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. Again, not a 30-year-old, not a 40-year-old. Interviewed with the Giants last year, and I could tell you from sources on the other side of it, interviewed really well with the Giants, and is one of these, like, I don't want to say Rex Ryan because I don't want to. I think that might have a negative connotation of like almost buffoonery or some sort of like, you know, like more of a personality based thing. But like Wink has one of those guys that is in your face, loud, and the players love playing for him, like a true players coach. I wonder if that works also this year in the offseason.
I'd be surprised if Peterson came back because I think that team is really poorly coached.
You might be right.
And
might be right.
You could argue Frank Reich, and maybe I'm 25% bitter over the Super Bowl still, but you could argue the Frank Reich piece of it. Once that went away, that team's never looked the same. And at some point, I don't know, you got
to
look.
And yet they went to the playoffs the last couple of years, right? Like,
hey, we got to talk about that. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to break down all the weird playoff shit and do $1 million picks. All right, $1 million picks. I got crushed last week. It was the first week I got crushed, I think, since week one or week two. I lost $1.162 million. Thankfully, it was fake. Down 1.412. The big thing that killed me was I had a $1 million parlay with the Cardinals needed to come through for it. The two teams I liked the most were the Bears and the Bills, and I wanted to put their money lines together with a team that I really liked. I picked the Cardinals. And it's so stupid. You pick these games, and then on Saturday, it's like, hey, George Kittle's playing. You're like, what? Why is George Kittle playing? He had a broken foot. Now he's out there. And you just can kind of see it come in, and the Cardinals and the Cliff Kingsbury, the whole thing. And then I was wrong on Indy. I still can't believe I lost that one. I was up 24-7.
24-7, and they stopped him on four downs on the goal line. It was crazy they lost that game.
Rams. Goff broke his thumb. The only one I felt like I just really missed was Philly over Dallas. Dallas threw all over them, and the Philly secondary looked horrendous. All right, so heading into week 17, I feel like I can win this back, and I'm going to break this down into sections because I think in week 17, I want to bet on what I know, and we're doing this early. I'm gonna lower the numbers a little bit just because there's so many weird things can happen. But NFC East right now, Washington is favored by 1.5 over Philly, all lines courtesy of FanDuel. Dallas is favored by -3 over the Giants. I look at it this way. Who do you think's coming out of this division? Who's going to be playing Tampa Bay in round one? Washington has this crazy thing with Haskins gets cut on Monday, which Sal and I talked about on Sunday night's pod. And they actually did it. They might play Heineken. That's what we call him here on the BS pod. Alex Smith allegedly might play. Do I want an injured Alex Smith whose injury is on his one good leg and the other leg has had 28 surgeries? That makes me nervous. Also, they're matching up against this Philly team that Philly's Achilles heel is like, please don't throw on us. We have the worst secondary of all time. And Washington has one good receiver and God only knows who at quarterback. And then you look at this Dallas game. They're favored by -3 over the Giants. Dallas has looked good the last couple weeks. Dalton finally back. Like they can at least move the ball offensively. And the Giants have looked like a dud. And Jones doesn't look healthy. The lack of a running game. And, you know, they had this nice run with their defense. But then you look back and it's like, oh, every week you played somebody who was either a terrible quarterback or a banged up offense, whatever. And it looks to me like the safe bet is just to take Dallas to win the division at +210. So the two teams that could foil that are Washington beating Philly or the Giants beating Dallas. What do you think will happen?
All right. So the timing of it all is so interesting too. So the Giants play Dallas in the early afternoon at 1 o'clock, the Eagles, Eagles, Washington's at night. So Washington will know who or what they need to do. And the other team that plays earlier will know if Washington loses, if they're in or they're out. So the Washington deal is interesting. So not to get too much into it, last week, and I botched this on Coward this week, and I got crushed by Washington fans saying I didn't know what I was talking about, but I do know exactly the chronological order of it. Last week, he has the pictures come out, and Rivera was about to cut him the next morning.
Haskins.
When the pictures came out. Yeah, Haskins. He's like, screw it. Like, we can't do it. Rivera then, you know, has one of these moments where he sits back and is like, all right, I got 52 other guys. Alex isn't going to be able to go this week. We can't, in the biggest game of the season, just roll out Taylor Heinicke and say, all right, guys, this gives us the best chance, but I have to make a point. Doug Williams spoke with Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins apologized profusely. They stripped his captaincy. They fined him the most they could fine him, told him he's on a zero tolerance policy. And then they lost. And then they lost. And afterwards, I think everyone looked at it and was like, what are we doing? Let's make a statement and let's just move forward and get over this. So they cut him. But I don't think anyone there was fighting for Dwayne Haskins, like the players and everything. So if anything, I think they might be motivated off of that and be like, coach, you know, has our back. They got our back. I don't think they lose to Philadelphia. I think they empty the clip and I think they win. It doesn't even matter what happens in the early afternoon. I think Washington wins that game.
So the case for Washington would be everything you laid out with the Haskins thing, the post-Haskins era, the fact that they really seem to like playing for Rivera. They're going to have Gibson and McLaurin healthy in this game, so they'll at least be able to move the ball a little bit. But they also played Philly week one, and
their
front four annihilated Philly's offensive line.
Sacks.
Yeah, which I think Philly's offensive line's in worse shape than it was in week one.
Yeah.
I guess
Chase Young was unbelievable last week. He had 2 4-7. Like, Chase Young, this could be the Chase Young game where Chase Young just single-handedly just overpowers the Eagles and wins this game for Washington.
The other thing that you got to look at is Philly's up 14-3 in that game, and I think they gave up 35 unanswered.
Yeah,
38
now
unanswered.
Now they're going to rise up of, like, yeah, they might be done.
And it's a Sunday night game. It's what Jalen used to call the your bags already packed in the hotel room. You're just ready to go to Cancun, wherever you're going to go.
Nate Burleson calls it the ship your car game. You shipped your car already. Like, your car's already been shipped. The season's over.
Yeah. So what does Philly care about? All right. So you could either go
Washington in that game.
You could either go Washington -1.5 or Washington -125. I got to say, I didn't think Heineken was that bad last week. Sal and I talked about it on Sunday night. He actually like somebody dropped a long pass that it would have been like a 50 yarder. Yeah. He didn't look like frantic to me. Well, he wasn't awful. Certainly wasn't worse than Haskins.
They were down 20-3. Like, there was nothing that he can do. And guess what? If Alex Smith plays and he's on, you know, a decent leg, Fletcher Cox got hurt last week. Maybe he's not out there for the Eagles. Like, I don't know. I feel like Washington will take care of business.
I also think it would be funny if Dallas won and their fans who have been adamantly out on this team are now watching the Sunday night game.
Finally jump back
intensely.
In.
Yeah. Here's my fear with the Washington pick. If you're the NFL, you want Dallas to be in that four seed against Tampa.
Probably, yeah.
You want Dallas, Tampa in round one. So I'm not saying they would rig the game, but
no.
I think it
That's
will be.
Your sport.
I think
That's
it will be hard
NBA.
For Philly to not get some calls.
I could hear you. Yeah, I don't see that happening. I feel like Washington's story, as great as the Cowboys are for ratings, whatever else, like Washington's story, the NFL likes the Ron Rivera and the Alex Smith and the what that franchise has been in their new era. Like, that's a good storyline for the NFL too.
Giants plus 360 to win the division.
I kind of like that too, though. Like, it's like a throw. Like, I don't know. I feel like the NFL, it's not because of the Giants. It's because of how fucking crazy this season has been. Where it's like, we don't know. Like, it's almost like you're throwing your money at the fact that we don't know shit. Like that one. The Giants, who have not been just completely lifeless the last 2 weeks, could very well come out there, blow the doors off the Cowboys, and the Eagles randomly beat the Washington, and like the Giants are hosting a playoff game. In front of no fans, but still hosting a playoff game.
The one thing I'd say about Dallas, and Sal and I talked about it Sunday night, is Zeke kind of came out of his coma.
Looked all right.
And if he's going to look like the guy I watched last week, that could be something. So I think the funniest scenario is Dallas winning and then some sort of Alex Smith Heineken combo beating Philly as Doug Peterson does weird stuff.
I actually like the Giants over the Cowboys. I do.
Okay. Well, if you like the Giants over the Cowboys, then Giants plus 360 is a tasty winner. All right. We're going to mark all those down. Next one. We're grouping these two together because the NFC one seed's on the line, but also the last two NFC wildcard spots. So Packers minus 5.5 against the Bears. Rams minus 1 against the Cardinals. Here's what's going on with the Rams. No Jared Goff.
Nope.
No Henderson. And now no Cooper Kupp.
Nope.
And a defense that I thought was really good last week until about the halfway point through the fourth quarter when they just realized whatever they did defensively, it wasn't going to matter because Goff couldn't move the ball. I can't believe it might be over for the Rams. On the flip side, the Cardinals have an 8-game losing streak, not if the Hail Mary game didn't happen. And then the weird Philly game that they barely won. They're two plays away from losing 8 straight. And I don't trust Kingsbury at all. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I kind of like the Rams. And I don't even know the name of the quarterback they have. I feel like their defense can win this game by himself.
Yeah. So I talk to McVay often, and like the fact that they're in this predicament has got to be killing him, because if they'd beaten the Jets 2 weeks ago, they're in, right? If the Cardinals take care of business and beat the 49ers on that random game last week, the Rams are in. If the Rams beat the Seahawks last week, they're in. Now they're 0-3 and they've got to win this game without all these things. Truthfully, Goff has been terrible. Goff, thumb or not, I don't know if Goff was going to get this win. Like, I almost feel like, just watching from afar, let's roll the dice with this John Wolford. So he's been there with them for a couple years. He was at the AAF last year for the Arizona Hotshots. His uncle is Will Wolford, if you remember, the great offensive lineman for the Colts and the Bills. But like, again, I'm not going to do flips over him. I've never seen him play in an NFL game, but I did the preseason for the Rams a couple years ago. Burleson did him last year, and Nate and I were talking. He's like, that guy was good in preseason. Like, he moves. He does things out of the pocket. And I don't know if Goff's head was right. Like, I honestly don't. So at this point, just trust the coaching, and I think McVay finds a way, even with John Wolford. Like, I would trust McVay in this spot, knowing that they've already squandered it 3 times. I feel like he's not going to let it happen 4th.
Well, I have good news for you. This line has moved 4 points since I looked at the lines 3 hours ago. It is now Cards minus 3. I think because Cup is out and Henderson's out.
I hear Kyler's likely going to go.
And Kyler's going to go.
Yeah. So that's the word.
But you know who else is going to go? Cliff Kingsbury. We'll be seeing him in this game. So Rams plus 3. I liked the Rams when it was minus 1. Now the plus 3. And you made the key point. It's like, oh man, they don't have Goff. It's like, okay, Goff sucked. He was terrible 5 different times this year. How is this new guy going to be worse than Goff was?
Goff threw an interception last week.
It was one of the 5 worst plays of the year.
Bill, it's probably the worst play I've ever seen. It was one of the worst interceptions you could ever see. If he just ran it, he had 15 yards to run. He didn't. He throws it. And it's at some point you're just like, all right, maybe a change is good. Now, they signed Bortles, which could be a really fun, interesting thing off the practice squad of the Broncos, that maybe if Wolford gets slow, that Blake Bortles ends up winning the NFC playoff berth for them. But I just, you know, McVay's never lost to the Cardinals. And I know you could say, okay, well, that doesn't matter. That was previous years. Kyler's never played in a playoff game, never been in a big spot. Cliff's never coached in a game like this before. Like, I just, when it comes down to this, coaching matters to me. And I think Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and Sean McVay are enough for me to pick the Rams.
I think I'm with you. I don't mind the Goff thing. The Cup thing's a problem.
Yeah, he's really good.
Okay. So we'll mark down tentatively Rams +3. And then the other one was Packers -5.5 over the Bears. The Bears are also +205 to win this game outright. And basically, the Bears have to win, right? There's no way they can sneak in otherwise.
No, they can win if the Cardinals lose. And the Cardinals win.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
No, the Cardinals lose, the Bears go. They need John Wolford to be good. Yeah.
So we're probably getting Mitch in the playoffs. I don't see the Packers taking their eyes off the prize in this one with the one seed at stake and the bye, and then knowing that they get to play the worst team left in round two.
100% agree with you. And their home field is different than other teams. I honestly feel that way. And I know Rodgers does too, that home in Lambeau in late January is different than, I don't know, home in Tampa or home in Washington or wherever. Like, fans or no fans, and they'll have whatever, the limited fans they can have. I just feel like Sunday night was an example of, like, the Titans had no shot. They came out there. They're a great team, Titans. They came out there and home at Lambeau under the lights. Like, you're not beating Aaron Rodgers in those conditions. So the Giants have done it a couple of times in the playoffs. And I know Kaepernick went in there and won in Lambeau like a few years ago. But I just feel like Rodgers and LaFleur, they're on a mission here and they're not going to take the foot off the pedal.
The one thing with the Bears, that, you know, a lot of fuss about Trubisky, but the guy that came out of nowhere was Montgomery, who looked like one of the worst running backs in the league.
Rusher.
Yeah. For a year and a half, and all of a sudden he's got explosiveness, and I think he's been pretty crafty, and he's really helped them as well. And then Trubisky, now that they can run the ball better, now they do more play action with him, and then Allen Robinson.
What do you do with Trubisky? Playoffs or not, what do you do with him if you're Chicago?
Or what do you do with them if you're another team that needs a quarterback? Because he's a free agent, right?
Yeah, they didn't pick up his option, so they can franchise him, I think. They could do that if they want and give it another, like, one-year deal, but...
I honestly think that's what you do. I think you franchise him for a year.
Do it again.
Yeah.
See, one more time, just drag this on.
You don't want to see him go to like the Patriots for 3 years, $75 million, and then all of a sudden the Patriots unlock him. The Packers money line is probably the only thing I would do with this.
Yeah, I don't know about 5.5. And that game's being played at Soldier Field and the Bears need it, right? Like, I think the Packers can win, but I don't know if they're blowing them out in this game.
That would be a brutal loss for them. Reminiscent of Pat's Miami last year, where it's like, you have a bye week. All you have to do is take care of business twice at home to all of a sudden you're playing round one and you don't get the whole thing. Next one. So the 2 seed for the AFC and the AFC wild cards are all intertwined. Basically, it looks like the Steelers are tanking. They're fine with the 3 seed. They want to give, they played 5 games in December. They want to give Roethlisberger a rest. They're banged up, and
the way they see it is his health and rest is more important than home field advantage this year. Cause with no fans, it's like, they think it's whatever. So let's just make sure Ben is healthy. And if he's healthy and rested, let's go play anyone, anywhere. That's how they look at it,
which is great for the Bills. Cause then the Bills know, all right, well, the Bills are favored by 1 over the Dolphins. The Browns are favored by 9.5 over the Steelers. And if you're the Bills, it's like, why wouldn't you rest everybody in this game and get ready for week 18?
Well, yes, because they already have the tiebreaker over the Steelers. But then you're kind of relying on the Browns to still take care of business with Mason Rudolph for the Steelers at the quarterback. But I would say this. I would not be shocked if you saw a lot of Matt Barkley for the Bills this weekend.
That line's moved, actually. It's gone to Bills -1.5. So a little half
point.
What
was it originally?
It was initially 1. Browns... I just don't see the Steelers winning. I think they're fine with resting everybody, trying out weird offensive linemen.
Do you make anything out of the fact they're division rivals and the fan bases hate each other and they've beaten them 22 out of 23 times and like the Steelers would love to just keep them out of the playoffs? Because this would be the first time the Browns go to the playoffs since 2002. So do you make anything of like that stuff matters to like a Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson?
No.
Or is that just more like fan stuff?
But those guys could care less. Then Ravens are -820 to beat Cincinnati. So Colts are out if Browns, Dolphins, Ravens all win and then Tennessee wins. Tennessee's playing Houston. A Browns, Dolphins, Ravens parlay. It was +160. Now that's even gone up a little bit because the Dolphins line moved a little bit. So I think that's now +165.
Can you throw the Colts in there?
You could throw the Colts in there. I don't trust the Colts.
Yeah, you've been burned by them.
Yeah, I did. The Colts have hurt my feelings a couple times this year, and I'm done with Phil Rivers. And
they're in timeout.
This might be his last game. So, Bills, who could fuck that one up? Bills, Steelers, or Cincy?
Not Cincy.
You probably worry about the Bills, right? Just being like, fuck it, let's end with a bang.
Yes, yes. They just got cool news that Cuomo said that 6,700 fans will be there for the playoffs. Like,
yeah,
which you and I can break down. Why would a playoff game be less COVID problematic than a regular season game? But that's, hey, that's just whatever was decided. But the rules are, we're in LA and New York. You and I could talk for a while about the rules. But truth of the matter is, there might be a piece of them that's like, let's not even leave it up to chance. We want that home playoff game. We want the fans to see us. Let's blow out the Dolphins. But
and that's probably why I'm staying away from this one.
But McDermott is one of these smart coaches where I think he's thinking big picture here. And I think Josh Allen needs to be healthy. Diggs and those guys, they want them that first game. And if they play the Dolphins the next week, maybe you don't want to show everything anyway.
Next one. Actually, we'll take one more break and then we'll do the rest of them. Okay. Just some random games that I like. The Falcons are +6.5 over the Bucks. We saw this game 2 weeks ago and it was a toss up. Falcons almost won. They can move the ball. They can get a cheap garbage time touchdown near the end. I think it seems like they like Raheem Morris. I don't know if he's going to get that job, but it does seem like they've been playing pretty hard for him the last couple weeks. They hung with the Bucks. They've hung with the Chiefs. If you throw away the first four games of the year, they've actually been pretty good. 6.5 seems tasty. The Bucks are kind of pretty much locked into that 5 seed. They know they're making the playoffs. I don't think they really care where they go. Do you?
Yeah, I think the Bucks are one of those deals where it's more statement to the rest of the league. They loved the way they played against Detroit. I could see them wanting to keep the gas on the pedal going into this thing.
So maybe it's a stay away. Next one is Jets are +3 against the Patriots.
Oof.
This is just a flat out short of the Patriots, who looked as awful as I thought they were going to look on Monday night. And it was weird because, you know, the last 10 years, because this happened to us with Bird and McCalen Parrish, right? And I remember going into the mid-90s, all of a sudden our team was terrible. And it's like, wow, wish I had appreciated that, the big three a little more. So in the Brady era, I think all the Boston fans really did appreciate the second half of it because they knew, like, all right, someday Brady's going to be gone. We're going to be dealing with some horror, all the cap ramifications of all the stuff we did. And we're just going to get our ass kicked and we're going to have some terrible quarterback and it's going to suck. That's lurking ahead of time. So let's enjoy this. And that's what happened Monday night. That's how I felt the whole game. It's like, this was the check for the awesome dinner where it's, oh no, yeah, let's get one more thing of oysters.
Bill shows up.
And just get all the dessert. And you're like, ah, fuck it. And then the check comes. And everybody's like, what? Wait. watching Newton and Stidham just bounce passes and sail passes. And it was honestly depressing. But at the same time, we knew the moment was coming. And I don't see why it would be any better this week against the Jets. Do you?
Yeah. First of all, the weirdest part was like them ending that game with just like six straight punts, like just completely like white flag, like surrender, we're done. It just did not feel Patriots. The only reason, and this is so petty, and I don't even know if the players respond to him at this point, but like Belichick hates the Jets.
Yeah.
Hates the Jets. And I think he would hate to lose to the New York Jets in any situation. And maybe he can get his players to rally around that and say, like, we don't end the season this way. We're better than that. We're the Patriots. We have some pride. And McCourty and Slater and all those guys do a rah-rah thing. But I don't know. I mean,
they just don't have enough talent. Offensively, if Harris isn't going to play, they have no above average skill position player. Then defensively, no Gilmore. Hightower's already gone. Nobody on the front seven would scare anybody. And then, you know, then Gilmore's gone. So J.C. Jackson moves up and he's like a nice number two, but you don't want him as your number one. And
sure, he's got a lot of interceptions, but he also,
I just think the Jets probably have more talent than the Patriots do at this point of the season, which is a horrifying thing. The Jets also, it doesn't matter if they win, they're locked into the two seed.
They can't get Trevor Lawrence and they can't do any worse than number two. So, look, the Jets are playing good football right now. I'm not even saying that like jokingly.
No.
Like, they played really well last week. They played really well 2 weeks ago. So It's everything is fair. The only thing is what you believe Belichick can bring out of these players. Because I don't think Bill is walking in there and being like, eh, whatever. I think he's trying to get the best out of them.
There is a massive draft pick disparity that I'm on multiple Patriot fan threads about.
What do they think?
I mean, it could,
what do we
they,
do?
The Pats could basically get up to like number six if things fall correctly, or they could drop into like the mid tens.
And are you sold on quarterback no matter what? Or do you think free agent route is the way
I'm
to
mad
go?
They won the Baltimore game. Yeah. The monsoon, that was like the big dick tease for, oh, Belichick magic.
Yeah, we're back.
Like, this team had no talent.
The Chargers game was crazy. They won 45-0. And then the next week, the Rams just completely annihilate them.
Yeah. They're bad.
Weird year.
I'm marking down Jets +3. The other one I really like, this might be my favorite bet of the day, is Chargers over the Chiefs. The Chargers are -3.5. Chiefs have already said Mahomes isn't playing. I can't imagine we'll see Kelce or Tyreek Hill or Watkins, or really anybody who could pull a hamstring that wouldn't be recovered 2 weeks from now. I think they'll shelve all the skill guys. I think they'll be really careful with all their O-linemen. And we've also seen Reed in other years completely not give a shit about week 17. And then you have the Chargers. You talked about before, they're playing hard for Anthony Lynn.
Yeah.
Herbert's going for Offensive Rookie of the Year. They have like real stakes. And the line's only 3.5. I think that line should be like Chargers -7.
Yeah. So Kelce last week, and it's so funny. I feel like it's Kelce could retire tomorrow and be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And we're going to be like, wait, did we appreciate what Kelce was like? Kelce broke the record for tight end receiving yards in a season last week. No one even made a dent about it.
Yeah.
So there's no reason, there's no records for him. So he's not going to play. Mahomes won't play. I'm with you. I think they rest everybody. And I think this could be one of those, the Chargers win 41-0 and the Chiefs don't even think about it because who cares? We're going next week. We're on the bye. And then we start our playoff run. Like the Chiefs have nothing to gain from playing hard and winning this game. Nothing. I don't, if they were 14 and if they were 15-0, maybe, because it'd be like 14-1, there's been a lot of 15-1 teams. There's been a lot of 14-2 teams. You don't know the difference. I don't think there's any reason for them to even roll out any starters in this game.
Long shot parlay of the week. Houston is +285 against Tennessee, but Houston's got, they've got COVID stuff. They have some stuff about who the next coach is going to be. And that, who's that guy? Yep. Jack Easterby is just a maniac. That's been the weirdest story of the year.
It's funny. So Easterby, real quick, because you'll appreciate this. He was the team chaplain for the Patriots. And he's done some coaching stuff. And then now, like, SI did an article on him basically saying he's the puppet master in Houston and he's firing O'Brien and he's firing this guy. Like, I don't know him that well. I've met him a few times. Like, I also think it's one of those that the media found some, like, pinata and this guy's just getting just destroyed. And I'm like, I don't even think he's really responsible for this season. I think this team was horribly coached this season.
Yeah.
The team was not built well. And, I, you know, it's funny. I like J.J. Watt and that bit he did about all that in week 15. And everyone says, oh, man, J.J. Watt's the best. Of course, all my cynical friends are texting me being like, oh, J.J. Watt, like, where were you all season? Like,
right.
What is it? So, but if J.J. Watt's calling out teammates, like, I just don't know what's going on in that building right now. And I feel like I would stay away at all costs from Houston.
I think I agree. I wanted to mention it. Niners are +210 against the Seahawks. The Seahawks are in this weird position where they have like an outside chance of being the one seed, but they know they're probably not going to be the one seed. And the moment this game gets out of hand for them, they're just going to pack it in and get ready for week 18. Basically, Carroll's been around the block a million times. He gets how it goes. Niners +210. They've had this gritty, gutty, fighting the elements kind of season. You got our guy, Robert Saleh, ready to become a hero in Detroit. This would be his going out party. Kittle's back. They don't have any receivers, which is a problem. Debo's out and Ayuk is out. Mostert's out. Beathard actually looked pretty good last week. Certainly good enough to kill the Cardinals bet. But I just like the +210, I think, is like semi-enticing with them, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they emptied the bag, though, against the Cardinals. Like, we're going to have one last. Remember, they've been, we talked about this. They're at, you know, not the Motel 8, but they're not exactly living at the Four Seasons the last month in Arizona. This game ends. They immediately can go back to their families. I wonder if the eye is off the prize that Saturday was. All right.
Saturday was their Super Bowl? Okay.
That was it. Let's get this win. Let's knock out. And then, all right, the holidays are here. Christmas. Let's go. Like, I respect those guys. They're all fighters, and I think they want to win for a lot of different reasons, but I wouldn't be surprised if they come out and they're not exactly as sharp as last week.
Last one would be Panthers plus 250 against the Saints. No McCaffrey, no Mike Davis. But yeah, the Panthers have just the entire season, anytime they're like 6, 7, 8 point underdogs, yeah, they're frisky as hell. Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, look, they gave Kansas City everything they can handle. They gave Green Bay everything they handle. And then last week, they do that to Washington. I don't know. Rule had a really good soundbite this week about how bad the Panthers have been in recent years in December. And like, he doesn't stand for that. And these guys, like, everyone is on an audition tape right now. And, you know, for Teddy Bridgewater, every one of these games matters. I think going up against the Saints, I would think this game will end up being closer than just a Saints blowout by any means. And I don't know what New Orleans is going to do as far as playing all their starters either. So I would think Carolina keeps it close.
Jags plus 750 against the Colts.
It's tough. It's tough. The only reason would be
they could win and still get the first pick.
Yeah, I know. And the only thing would be if Indy is so worried about the scoreboard that they keep their eyes off the prize. Like, I think everyone was knocked out of their survivor pools week one with the Jaguars beating the Colts. Here we are at the week 17. Does it happen again? I don't know.
All right. Let's do it. The $1 million picks.
Let's go.
God, the Giants plus 360 is still staring at me. You can't do both. It's got to be either. You got to back.
When you could put all your faith in Joe Judge, you got to do it.
are we sure they can't win? And then we're sure Philly. See, the Philly part, I think, what did Nate Burleson call it?
Ship your cars.
This is a ship your car game for Philly. Yeah. All right.
Like, we're done. My car's already been shipped. I'm worried about the logistics of when U-Haul's coming to pick up my stuff.
All right. I'm going to scale it down a little this week just because it's Wednesday afternoon as I'm making these picks. And God only knows.
Don't you feel good, though? Don't you feel lucky? I feel like this is the week.
All right. Maybe I won't scale it back. Maybe talk Vinter. $1 million picks for week 17, we are down $1.412 million. I promise you by the Super Bowl, I will be in the positive on that because I'm good in the playoffs. First one, we're going to go Washington minus 1.5 against Philly with my guy Heineken. Mm. What's his real name?
Taylor Heineke.
Heineken?
Heineken works.
Maybe little Alex Smith for like a quarter and a half to inspire the troops. Dennis Quaid, any given Sunday style, who knows?
Exactly right.
I'm going to go 300K on Washington minus 1.5 over Philly. Rams plus 3 over the Cardinals. We're going to introduce the Jared Goff theory here. When the line swings 6 points because Jared Goff isn't playing, what the fuck are we doing? He's Jared Goff. I don't even care who the backup is. Rams plus 3, we're putting $330,000 on that. I just don't think the Cards are a playoff team. Cliff Kingsbury can't be in the playoffs. Stop it.
You're betting on McVay and Aaron Donald so far, and you're betting on Chase Young so far. You got to look at it that way.
Sounds great. That's right where I want to be. I'm going to stay away from this Bills, Dolphins, Browns, Steelers, Ravens, Cincy. There's too much weirdness there. Staying away from all that. Staying away from the Falcons. Going to take Jets plus 3. We're going to put 200K on that one against the Patriots.
Does that feel weird doing that?
No. We bet on the Bills last week here. And then we're doing 300K on the Chargers minus 3.5 against the Chiefs.
Chargers are going to win that game by like 30.
Yeah. And we're staying away from long shot parlay this week because didn't really like any of them.
I like that one you had with all the teams going chalk, all the AFC teams.
You want to do that as the long semi long? So that was Browns, Dolphins, Ravens is plus 165.
Browns, Dolphins, Ravens, and I said throw in Colts, but you refuse.
No, I'm not putting
out of principle.
All right, fine. I'll put 200K on that as well. Browns, Dolphins, Ravens, all of them just have to win. That is plus 165. Those are the $1 million picks.
Love it.
For week 17. Schrager, you're doing 7 days a week from this point on?
Yes, we're in. Right through the Super Bowl. Let's go.
What playoff game? Do you get to pick your sideline playoff game or they just assign it to you?
You know what? I don't know if I'm doing sidelines. Every year I do it for Fox, but I don't know with what's going on with COVID if I'm even allowed to and come back to the studio in New York. So we got to figure that one out.
All right. You get along with Aaron, right?
Yeah, Aaron's awesome.
All right, Aaron's my girl. I want to make sure. I don't know. Once people are on the sidelines, there could be little petty rivalries. No, I don't know what's going on there.
Not me, my friend. I'm a white male who does the sidelines. It's me and Evan Washburn. I'm like, there's no competition with me.
You guys are just at each other's corner. All right. Happy New Year. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on. All right, we're ending 2020 with something I know nothing about. It's the year-end awards for teen culture. My 15-year-old daughter, Zoe, is here.
Hi, guys.
I follow teen culture basically by just walking by her room and just listening for 2 seconds to whatever weird video or whatever she's watching. But she's immersed into this whole world the same way that I was immersed in sports once upon a time. So I thought it'd be fun to have her give us the awards. And you can kind of see people listening out there, whether your parents or people in your 20s or whoever, just what a weird world this is. You admit this is a weird world, right?
Oh, it's super weird. Okay. It's completely irregular.
All right. You're not a weird person, though.
I'm not. I would say I'm sort of weird. No, I think everyone's weird.
You're not really weird.
Okay.
TikTok follow of the year is
Sienna May, who is a new emerging star in the TikTok world. And she basically just spreads a lot of body positivity. That's her entire page for the majority of it. And she's just dancing around and she has her stomach out or bikini on or big sweatshirt, whatever it may be. But she's just helping people feel comfortable in their own skin and that they were meant to be in the body that they're in.
Well, didn't she become famous from just some random video that
took off? Yeah, it just took off. And that's what happens on TikTok. It's a lot easier to become famous just because
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think so for people like her because now she's one of the biggest stars. She has millions of followers and she's doing great. I think she's awesome. She's around my age and she's super socially aware and doing things that other influencers aren't. And I just think she's super cool and she definitely deserves a TikTok award.
Well, you also like that this was the most negative year in probably American history. And there's at least one person out there who's spreading
positivity.
Yeah,
she's killing it. And she's taking the pandemic seriously and she's spreading awareness and everything. I think she's awesome.
Well, congrats, Sienna May. You win the For Realsies Award for TikTok Follow of the Year. Next one is YouTuber of the Year. And the winner of this award also won Best Adaptation to the Pandemic in 2020. Who is this?
This is Emma Chamberlain, and she's been a favorite of mine for years and years now. But I just think within the time period that we're in now and everything is so limited, she's taking whatever she has and making content. And Emma Chamberlain, she's a hilarious girl. She's very witty. You can tell how smart she is. I think she just turned 20 or 19. Okay. She's older than me by a little bit, but she's super mature. She lives in her own house. She does her thing and she's super raw on her channel. Like she has mental breakdowns every other video and she shows that that's okay, especially in the times that we're in now. You're so bound to be trapped or feel upset and she shows that it's okay to feel that way. And she also makes really funny content. She has a coffee line called Chamberlain Coffees, which is huge. Everyone's buying from her. I just think she branded herself well. She's doing great and she's making great use of what she has.
Okay. Biggest disappointment of 2020 is?
This easily goes to David Dobrik, who we all know is one of my favorite YouTubers. And I still love him and support him, but he hasn't posted a video in like 9 months. He posted one video throughout the pandemic and it was for like over his time limit. He usually makes videos 4 minutes and 20 seconds long. It was over the time limit. Super weird video with Borat in it, which was, I mean, I guess it was funny, but like, it just totally wasn't David, in my opinion.
So what do you think? He's pulling back? I think he's pulling back.
And that's totally okay if he needs a break. But he's hanging out with friends every day and making TikToks and on all other forms of social media. And all of his comment sections are like, haha, good video, David. Post a vlog. Like, that's his entire comment section. Everyone's super disappointed. And I think it's really upsetting because he was one of my favorite YouTubers last year. I watched him constantly, look forward to all of his videos, and he has all the resources to continue creating. So I don't know what you're doing, David, but get a hold of yourself.
Come on, David. Most fun COVID trend.
I think, personally, with a couple of my friends, I've been doing these Netflix parties on this Google extension called Teleparty, which basically you can just watch some Netflix movie, whatever you choose with a couple friends and you connect and there's like a chat window next to your movie and you can just talk to each other throughout the movie. And it was super fun. I watched The Greatest Showman with my friends and we were singing along to all the songs and stuff and just making commentary on the movie without actually having to hear their voices. So you could still pay attention.
So
I think it's great.
So it's like Zoom crossed with a watch party crossed with you're the peanut gallery for the movie.
Yeah, basically. But you don't have to actually talk. You can just like text.
That's
great.
Cool.
Go check it out.
All right, next category. This is a good one. Feud of the year. What was the feud of the year in teen culture?
So I chose Bad Baby and Whoa Vicky, and they're both, well, Bad Baby emerged from her Dr. Phil interview.
Yeah.
Which she was just a total brat, and she got famous for the catch me outside, how about that line to Dr. Phil, and made a rap song on it, and now is supposedly a legitimate rapper. But Whoa Vicky, another music artist and just influencer, apparently Bad Baby pulled up to her studio and they got in a fist fight and Bad Baby lost.
Oh.
And she's like posting tweets like, oh, if you think I lost, you're delusional, like all this stuff. Meanwhile, there's a video of Whoa Vicky like beating the crap out of her on a couch.
Wow.
So that happened.
Who knew about Whoa Vicky? Surprised this didn't lead SportsCenter.
I know. She's been in trouble since the beginning, but I would say that's the biggest one that people are talking about.
Okay. Well, this leads to song of the year. Favorite pop culture moment that crossed over into TikTok world and led to a weird collision. This was a song I showed you because I still watch Saturday Night Live, even though you don't.
I know.
What was it?
This was a Timothée Chalamet, Pete Davidson Yeet Skirt song, which is probably the biggest TikTok sound right now, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. It's being used constantly through like different interpretations of whatever anyone wants to like.
Well, the joke
make
of it,
it
they're playing two young kids who started a rap
yeah,
duo.
Yeah, and it's just, it's totally
and they're
hilarious.
Idiots. And the other people on the set can't believe that this is like the biggest.
And it's totally accurate. Like, I know, like people on SoundCloud and stuff are just making these horrible songs and getting 3 billion views or whatever. And it's just
That was a pretty good sketch. All right. This is a big one. 2020, the cancel culture canceled of the year. We have four nominees. Shane Dawson, Trisha Paytas.
Trisha Paytas.
Jeffree Star. And Zoe Laverne. I don't know any of those
any
people,
of them?
But let's go on one at a time. What was Shane Dawson's case for being canceled?
Shane was a huge, huge YouTuber since the beginning. I would say he was one of the first big YouTubers, and he's been around forever. But some stuff uncovered itself, and they found
that sounds ominous.
Videos of him doing blackface.
Oh, no.
And just like making super racist comments, and then some weird child grooming comments, and then some bestiality comments
It's the quadruple crown. Jesus, Shane Dawson.
Yeah, and last year he made a palette and he was doing great. He was thriving. He had this huge series going, and now he's just totally like frowned upon and embarrassing.
Did he try to apologize? What happened?
I think he knows that he is totally in the wrong, and there's no comeback to angle. Yeah. For kids to watch him after what he's done. So,
tough
sorry,
one for Shane. All right. So, he's one nominee. Trisha Paytas. You said she Trisha Paytas. She gets canceled every 2 weeks.
Every other day, I would say.
But that's kind of her gimmick.
That's her gimmick. She's just a troller.
Yeah.
But she's absolutely ridiculous. Constantly starting some feud with whatever random person she chooses that day.
Right. Well, she waded into the D'Amelio when people
the
tried D'Amelio's, to cancel D'Amelio.
Yeah. She somehow got involved.
Can you tell that story quickly, what happened, just
of
so
the
people
D'Amelio's?
Can understand how crazy all of this is?
So the D'Amelio's started this series called Dinner with the D'Amelio's, and it was one episode in. Pretty sure they're done with it now because of what happened, but they had a guest star, James Charles, come on, and they had a friend of the dad's make them a nice like dinner, and he's a chef. And basically Dixie D'Amelio tasted a snail that he put in their paella and ended up spitting it up and throwing up all over the floor.
And they're kind of making faces.
And they're making
food,
faces,
right?
Yeah. And Charlie was like, I wish I just had dino nuggets or something. And it was just, people felt it was super disrespectful towards the chef, which I agree, but they're also young girls and bound to make mistakes.
They're like a year older than you, right?
Yeah, well, Charlie's 16 and Dixie's 19, I think. So Dixie doesn't have as much leeway as Charlie does, I would say. But that's the whole story.
Because they're too successful anyway.
Yeah, they're too successful.
So how does Trisha Paytas get involved in this?
And then Trisha just decided to totally obliterate the situation, scream at Dixie throughout like 5 videos and Charlie saying they don't deserve a platform. Like they're horrible people. They're bratty and disrespectful. They don't deserve the fame they have. All this stuff. And I'm pretty sure Dixie kind of clapped back with some sort of attack towards Trisha, which you never, ever attack Trisha Paytas because right. she will always win no matter what, no matter how many scandals she's been in, or even if she's wrong, she's always going to win. She's always going to get the last word. So next time, if you
that's
ever get in a
wants.
Scandal,
yeah
that's
it's
exactly what she wants.
Okay.
So if you get in a scandal with her, don't clap back. Just don't do it.
But she's uncancelable because...
She's uncancelable. Okay. She's like... She's never
so she's not going to win this category. What did Jeffree Star do?
Oh, Jeffree Star just, they found out he's made a bunch of racist comments, kind of similar to the Shane situation, minus the bestiality and
that's
pedophilia
tough.
Stuff.
He should have thought of the bestiality.
I know. But yeah, he just super racist comments. And yeah.
And then Zoe Laverne?
Oh, Zoe Laverne was a whole huge scandal, which she basically became super close with a 13-year-old.
Oh.
She's 19.
Oh, no.
I think. And there ended up leaking a video of her kissing him.
What?
Yeah. So everyone freaked out. And she's also said the N-word and a bunch of horrible things that people Jesus. Already disliked her for. But then she kissed this 13-year-old boy and people freaked out because obviously they're going to freak out. Like, that's totally illegal and disgusting. You can handle yourself. Don't become super close to the 13-year-old if you have feelings. Think about right. it next time, Zoe.
Well, so who wins between her and Shane Dawson? Who got more canceled?
I think I dislike Zoe Laverne more. Okay. And that's not to like right. dismantle anything that Shane did, but I just dislike her more.
All right. Maybe they're both winners or losers yeah. in this case. The dumbest cancel culture moment. So cancel culture
it's
not just a big
way.
Thing in real life. And you're in this whole teen culture
yeah.
world, it's constant. It's
oh,
always
it's always
happening.
Going. There's always hateful people out there. And sometimes victims should not be chosen. So this time around, there was Claire Drake and Yodeling Haley, which are two participants in the Four Freak Show, which I'm absolutely obsessed with. There's these four kids who do Zoom videos and just act in these characters and make fun of each other and stuff. It's super funny. But basically, Claire's situation was that she used a filter a year or two ago that gave her edges in the filter. Mm. Which are like
I don't know what that means,
well-known, renowned, like it's black girls to like lay down their baby hairs in like a specific style,
okay.
which is super beautiful. But it was a filter that was made for anyone to use. And I'm sure many people had used it and everyone just freaked out that they found this picture of her using a filter that gave her edges.
Okay.
And she apologized and she felt horrible. She's a 15-year-old girl. Like, it was a super sad apologize. She was crying and everything.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was worth freaking out over because she explained that she had learned and she would never do anything like that again. And I just thought it was, I thought it was a bad moment for cancel culture.
So two things there. One is she's young. Two, she made an honest mistake that she realized afterwards.
Like, and she ignorance. Had grown from there. And
yeah.
then Haley's situation was that she made a joke on one of their Twitch live streams a year back about Michael Jackson and his pedophilia.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
alleged, rumored lawsuit,
alleged, yeah.
all that stuff.
Yeah. All that stuff. She made a joke about it and people found it and freaked out. Meanwhile, everyone's making jokes about
yeah.
Zoe Laverne. On TikTok, who was also involved in that sort of realm.
Right.
And another guy, Tony Lopez, who was involved in that same sort of thing, TikToker. It just felt, super disgusting.
Those sound
unfair.
Recoverable.
Yeah,
I think the
definitely recoverable.
Be all right.
They'll be fine.
All right.
But the bad moment for us.
The worst apology to the cancel culture warriors goes to?
Dixie D'Amelio.
Okay, what'd she do?
Well, we just discussed her situation with spitting out the snail.
Oh, that was that apology.
Yeah,
okay.
It just felt like super dishonest. She didn't really apologize for what she did. And she handled the situation completely horribly. So next time, don't clap back at the people who are trying to educate you, especially Trisha Paytas, because you'll never win against her. Just
yep.
apologize and move forward and explain that you will grow from this situation.
Well, you have 2021... Your prediction for breakout influencers. You think Four Freak Show bounces back
yeah,
and becomes
I
a
think,
dominant force?
Totally. I think they're so cool and smart. And especially in the times we're in when you can't see friends constantly, they feel like a friend group that you get to watch, interact, and hang out and socialize and be super funny together. I just think they're going to be super successful, smart people. If this means that they're going to continue the Freak Show or go off and do something else, I just think there's a bright future.
How old are those kids? They're like 19, 20?
There's like 17, 19, 15. Yeah, that range. So pretty close to me. I think they're awesome.
Okay. Your comeback influencer of the year is Logan Paul?
Yeah. So Logan Paul, as we all know, got into a scandal a couple years back. He posted a YouTube video in this forest in Japan that was known for, it's called like a suicide forest or something like yeah. that. Probably not a good idea to be filming or going into a suicide forest in general. But he filmed a man who had committed and kind of made a joke about it. And it was really horrible. And people totally turned on him. Rightfully so. But
he was kind of the first like truly canceled influencer.
Yeah, I think he was. Yeah. He was the kickstart to the cancel culture.
Yeah.
But recently, I haven't watched his videos as much. I know Ben has been watching him a lot, but I've been following him lately. And he seems like he's really changed his entire mentality and is super apologetic about what he did and learned from it. And he's trying to shift his content towards things that he finds more interesting and has totally educated himself. So happy for you, Logan Paul. Glad you learned and that you took cancel culture and you learned from your mistakes. So I think he's on a good route right now.
All right, we'll go positive. The TikTok heartthrob of the year.
Oh my gosh, this is so funny. So basically there's a sound on TikTok. I'm not sure what the song is called, but it's just like a dancing sound that people had been dancing to and using in the background of their videos. And this guy on a football team, I think he's committed to Harvard.
So he's a high school kid going to Harvard.
Yeah. Okay. And he plays on a football team. He's well known as number 7 on TikTok. Don't know his real name. Just know that he's number 7. But he just made this dancing video where it starts off with him solo walking out of a house, just like singing to this song, and then it turns and he's with a bunch of his teammates jumping in a circle singing to the song. And he got super famous off of it.
And he was the heartthrob. He won every girl's
heart. He won everyone's heart. And he just keeps making the same video, the same sound, sometimes different sounds. And he's just the heartthrob of the year. Number 7. Don't know your name, number 7.
The Jacob Elordi Award for heartthrob of the year?
Yeah.
Okay, congrats to number 7.
Congrats, number 7. Good luck at Harvard or whatever you're going.
Most dangerous teen trend.
Okay, so the well-renowned Omegle wins this one. And
explain
if you don't
what
know
Omegle
what Omegle is.
A lot of people don't know what it is.
It's basically like a website similar to FaceTime, but you can skip the people who you get. And it's completely random people that you're being put with on like this FaceTime type of window. And you can talk to them. And if you don't want to talk to them, you can skip them. And you put in filters like TikTok or baseball or whatever, and it will give you people with similar filters as you. So you can kind of like gear your people towards whatever you want to see.
So it's like almost like a little bit of like Tinder Grindr in there too.
I
without
guess.
The sex because it's a pandemic.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're...
So that's...
What
I've
don't
met...
you like about it? What is your biggest
What I don't
concern?
Like is that it's definitely available to creepy people who can go on there and do creepy things.
Pretend they're somebody they're not.
Yeah. Or just be doing something disgusting.
Or talk to... your brother.
Yeah. And start playing video games with your brother and become close friends with your brother.
So you feel like this one's not going to last?
No, I feel like it is going to last. I think you got to look out for yourselves if you're going on there. I've met a few friends on there, but I would just say be careful with how you use Omegle and if you do use it, because there have been some horror stories I've heard of.
Okay. Why don't you be careful?
I will be careful.
I don't even like that you're on this thing.
I won't use it anymore.
You could meet people in a lot of different ways. Lamest Gen Z backlash of 2020. You said Ed Sheeran and Louis Capaldi.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't like how they were treated this year. What did they do wrong?
Okay, so we all know Ed Sheeran and obviously Louis Capaldi as well, but Ed Sheeran.
Is Louis Capaldi the guy I used to make fun of?
Yeah, he is the guy you used to make fun of.
I've been someone I used to love. What's that song?
Yeah, that was right.
In the day, well, in the man.
Look at you, Louis Capaldi fan over here.
Definitely not a fan.
But Ed Sheeran has had many, many hits, and he's a great artist.
Yeah.
He writes music. He's written music for Taylor Swift, Selena Gomez, like all these people, all these songs that everyone's obsessed with, he's written them. Meanwhile, everyone's hating on him because of the way he looks.
Because
he got red hair and he's not like the idealistic look. You're amazing, Ed Sheeran, but it's just for our society, he's not like the beauty standard. And people are hating on him because of that. Meanwhile, he's a super talented guy, and it just totally clashes with the entire like idea that 2020 is trying to bring with my generation. It's just, it's so confusing. Like,
Woke's always appalled by this.
Oh, stop it. And the same with Lewis. He's getting hate for the same reason. Meanwhile, he makes good music. I mean, he's
a normal guy.
Yeah, right. Just a normal guy. He's not like, yeah.
All right, the next award is for the Zoe Simmons really ridiculous, really dumb personal trend of the year.
Wow, really ridiculous and dumb.
It was ridiculous and dumb.
Okay.
Why don't you explain what the trend is and the audience can decide?
Well, sometimes in the time period we're in now, I don't have a lot of places to go, a lot of things to get ready for as I would normally if we weren't in a pandemic. I watch YouTubers getting ready. So I can live through them getting ready and I don't actually have to get ready.
So you watch somebody like in their bathroom getting ready to go out for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I do.
And what are you trying to learn from this? Like makeup tips?
No, I just like, it's like the thrill of getting ready and going somewhere. This is what my life has come to, guys. And if you're in the same boat as me and would like to watch people get ready, I suggest Brittany and Brooke Mooney, who are from Long Island. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
They're just really good at getting ready?
They're really good at getting ready.
Do they actually go anywhere? They're just
I don't know. Okay. I don't care. That I just like great. The thrill of them getting ready.
This is the first ever Lele Pons Award. Lele Pons?
Oh, Lele Pons.
Lele Pons Award for better be careful. you might lose everything if you don't change.
You might become
bad
irrelevant.
Yeah, so who wins this one? You have the D'Amelio sisters I have written down.
That's, oh, okay. Yeah.
So what do they have to be careful of? Because they had a lot of success, but now...
It seems so similar to the way that Lele Pons was. She was like my favorite, embarrassingly, my favorite Instagram person in seventh grade. I thought her videos were hilarious, but she just kind of died off and her humor didn't really match with my humor now because I'd like to say I'm a little bit more sophisticated and mature than I was in seventh grade. But... even like the D'Amelios, they don't really appeal to me that much because they don't make content that I'm that interested in. And I don't support a lot of the things that they do and that they keep quiet with a lot of situations that happen. So I would say start gearing your content towards people that are my age as well. And not only dances and videos that are interesting to littler kids.
Right. Make it a little smarter.
Yeah, make it a little smarter. I want to watch your videos. I want to support you.
Funniest romance of the year. This is your girl, Trisha Paytas.
Oh, yeah. Trisha making a comeback.
So what happened?
Ladies and gents, Trisha Paytas is officially engaged.
To who?
I don't know his name. Just some random dude who started dating like 3 months ago, maybe.
And why did this delight you so much?
Because Trisha Paytas is such an extra person. And as we know, she's kind of crazy. Mm. And so basically, her and her boyfriend went on a photo shoot dressed up as Aladdin, the Aladdin characters.
Okay.
So she was the girl and he was the guy, and they were all dressed up in these costumes, and she ended up getting engaged to in a belly suit.
Wow.
With wearing a crown and the whole getup.
And so you're not confident in this marriage?
Definitely not confident, considering I only heard about him a couple of months ago, and she's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Don't see how that could go well, but best of luck to you, Trisha, and your new fiance. Not sure what his name is, but we'll call him Aladdin for now.
In your least favorite relationship of 2020, Noah Beck and Dixie?
This easily goes to Noah Beck and Dixie D'Amelio. If you guys don't know, Noah Beck's another TikToker that emerged a couple months ago off of one random viral thirst trap video.
Yeah.
But him and Dixie got into a relationship and he's totally into it more than she is. He's calling her baby and all these cutesy things in James Charles' video that he just made with them. And she's like totally dismissive of him. Like, seems like she doesn't even want to be involved with him.
And so you feel like it's a career move?
Yeah, totally a career move. But he actually likes her and she doesn't like him. And they just made like a lie detector test video. And she was like answering all these horrible questions. Like, he asked if she loved him and she said no or something. And like, that's a fair answer. But it's just, come on, buddy. Like, you knew that was coming. Don't ask that question on the lie detector test. It just didn't go well for the two of them. I don't have faith.
All right, we'll do a quick speed round before we go. Two Taylor Swift albums came out this year.
Yeah.
Which one did you like more?
I liked Folklore more, but I think Evermore has some great songs on it. I'm just still so hooked on Folklore.
So you think Taylor Swift, one of her biggest years ever. I can't believe
easily.
You still like her. She's been in your life ever since you liked music.
I kind of fell off during her half like pop genre, I guess. Now she's back into like this kind of indie like cool stuff that I like.
What about, you think Secret Marriage, the rumors of the Secret Marriage or anything like
I'm
that?
I'm so
no?
confused with that. Okay. I mean, it could make sense considering a lot of her songs are based off of these like lovey-dovey mystery men.
Okay.
And maybe she is married. Honestly, I could see it for her. I totally support it. Taylor, just let us in on it. I'd like to know.
Favorite new musician of the year? Do you have one?
I don't know if there's any like new ones that I'm super interested in.
Okay. Favorite show that you streamed in 2020?
That's super. I would say Haunting of Bly Manor.
On Netflix. You also like The Wilds on Amazon.
Oh, The Wilds too. I haven't finished that yet, but that's a really good show. It's kind of like a spinoff of Lost.
You like Big Little Lies?
Oh yeah, I like that too. One. But I liked it because it was ridiculous.
You liked Defending Jacob?
Oh, Defending Jacob?
Oh
yeah, of course. Love that. Big Mouth season 4. Great.
To All the Boys I Love Too, whatever that one is.
I didn't like that movie. No.
Was there like a hit Netflix teen culture movie this year that
I don't think so. I was not impressed with anything that came out, and I'm waiting for the new series of High School Musical, the series that's supposed to come out, despite the cast drama that they have.
You're excited. Is that like Zac Efron's in that, or it's a totally
new
cast?
No, it's totally different. They had it last year during December times, and it was this girl, Olivia Rodrigo, and then she was the star of the show, and it was basically a bunch of kids in high school who were at the high school that High School Musical was filmed at, remaking High School Musical as their play. And it was super good. Great show. I think they're coming out with the season 2, so very excited.
What happens when the pandemic ends to teen culture?
Is That's
it like
a great question.
A great blossoming of, like, I don't even know, because everybody's indoors trying to be creative, and then
yeah,
they're
going
to want to hang out with their friends. Maybe it goes south.
I think it might go south, because when you're given, right now we're forced to be creative, and people like Emma Chamberlain, she's forcing herself to be creative and find these things. And I'm worried when we go back to the real world, like we forgot what the real world is like and how to create in the real world and stuff. And it just might be so overwhelming for teen culture that it can totally plateau.
Mm.
So we'll see what happens, but I would like to think that it will go well. It's just, you never know.
So basically we went into the year with TikTok, Snapchat, a tiny bit of Instagram.
I still stand by that.
And that's where we ended 2020 as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I definitely, TikTok and Snapchat are my two huge ones. YouTube as well. YouTube has become more into play as time has gone on. And Netflix.
All right, Zoe Simmons. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks
for
having
up
me.
Teen culture.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's it for the pod. You will see me on Sunday night with the Cuz on this feed, the first podcast of 2021. I'm so happy we're headed for 2021. Enjoy the New Year's Eve and the new year. And I will see you on this feed over the weekend. Stay safe. Thanks for everything.